And we think we're the sleepy old Pueblo. It's a small border city, but we're not. We're the 33rd largest city in the country. We're a major metropolitan city. We have the second largest county in the state. We're a big deal. We're a large municipality and body of government.
About a year ago, I saw my first drug deal. And I literally watched a guy selling drugs to another guy as the guy sitting next to him on the loop was smoking something in tinfoil. And I've never seen that my whole life. If I would have seen that like in the 80s, I would have flipped out. Like, and now it's kind of become normal.
Synthetic opiates have changed the landscape of addiction and folks living in mental health crisis. And it's always hard to determine what came first, chicken and the egg. The biggest thing that I think we hear in this community, which is, man, there's so many unsheltered folks. There's so much trash. There's public drug use. What are we going to do about that? And I think that will shape Tucson's future.
The Upside. My name is Edmund Marquez. We are sponsored today by the Heath team and your Tucson Sugar Skulls, your professional indoor football team. Again, Edmund Marquez. I'm here with my, I'm going to just be straight up, a good friend of mine. This is going to be really awkward. It's going to be an interesting conversation. This is the Chad Kazmar. Welcome to the show, Chad.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to do an official intro with you. It's very cool.
It feels weird. We have more clothes on than when we normally talk.
He means that because we ride bikes together. So if we're talking about having clothes or not clothes on, it's cycling. It's cycling. This is going to be an interesting conversation. One of my closest friends just got done being our chief of police at the city of Tucson and now is the vice county administrator for Pima County. Did I say that
it's
right?
It's a mouthful. Deputy county administrator. Yes.
Yeah, whatever. Something. He's a DCA. big shot at the county. So welcome. I would like to, just because the crowd doesn't know you as well as I do, just tell us about you because you're a Tucson boy.
I am. Yeah, born and raised, third generation Tucsonan, raising fourth generation, hopefully, that decide to stay in Tucson and continue our family tradition. Graduate of Amphi High School and U of A Bear Down. And
Panther.
Yeah, I worked for the city for almost three decades. I started that journey in just out of high school as a lifeguard and a water safety instructor, where I met who'd become my amazing life partner, Don.
And Don is amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, being chief of police was pretty cool, and being a police officer and serving this community, but meeting my wife was certainly the best thing that the city ever provided me the opportunity to do. So, yeah, almost three decades of service with the city and then retirement, and then now I'm part of the county leadership team.
So I want to stay on the police part. So for full transparency for you all, we would go on bike rides and we would deep dive, because the one thing we have in common is we absolutely love this community. Love this community. It's our community, right? It's all of our community. So as you were in the police force, just tell us very quickly your steps. How did you get to chief?
So did never aspire to be the chief of police. I started my journey with the police department in Midtown, in the old Ward 6 building, which was originally Operations Division Midtown. Started my career there. Did patrol work on patrol, bicycles, went to become a motor officer.
You did
officer.
Bicycle patrol?
I did. Yeah,
oh,
it was kind of like cheating.
Yeah,
it is. Getting paid to ride a bike.
You got your ride and got paid.
Never was a pro cyclist, but I got paid pretty good money.
I'd tell everyone you were a pro.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. And then journey of being a motor officer on the south side of town in Operations Division.
Motorcycle?
South. Yeah.
Oh,
so I was
good
one
for you.
Of, you know, enforcing the law and writing tickets. Not everybody's favorite person to see in the morning on the way into work, but important job. And really great culture on the south side of town. And then I became a supervisor and I went back to work at Midnights in downtown Tucson back then before we called it the district. And it wasn't revitalized and developed like it is today. Mm-hmm. So it was a very different atmosphere back then. And so I went from being on the hostage team and being a negotiator and working in two jobs I really loved to learning the side of managing and leading people. And that was a difficult transition in my early 20s. And so I did that for a while. I went to work in an undercover capacity leading what we call a community response team, which can be plainclothes one day where you're purchasing narcotics, firearms, weapons, working other legal activities. You're a tactical resource for the patrol captain. And I did that for some time. Or you can be in uniform when we have protests, other large-scale activities like Final Four championship games where
When we win the game, then we tear apart our city.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
So grateful to see that that didn't happen. You know, sad with the outcome, but happy to see. So we'll talk, I'm sure, more about that later. But that journey continued, and as things changed at home, and we started having children and other responsibilities, I started joining upper management levels of becoming a lieutenant and a captain, and eventually the deputy chief under Chief Magnus.
And then what year did you become chief?
At the end of 2021. Yeah, I'd been TDY'd over emergency communications and been the interim 911 director. And that was enlightening and probably the most substantial, significant year I had in my, up to that point in my 21-ish year career, 2 decades of service, because I got to see the police department and the community from a different lens. Great group of individuals as elevating the standing up under Mike Ortega's leadership of having two different primary 911 centers within police and fire, where we gave them their own unity and their own as a third standing public safety partner, where really silent, you know, they're the silent performers of the public safety team of making sure when the community's in crisis and they call 911, you get the right resource.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump into the good stuff.
Okay.
I let you do your story. It was very good though.
Thank you.
It was very good. So a city of our size, I'm just curious, from the Mile High view, just tell us our challenges from our city being of this size compared to others. Cause I look from the economic perspective, and
sure. We
used to compete back in the day with like San Diego, and we'd compete with Austin, and they seem to have left us in their tracks. And we seem to be competing more with like El Paso and Albuquerque. What's happening with us from a public safety perspective for a city our size?
I think from a public safety, so being homegrown, as we both are, I think it's 1 degree of separation. We think we're the sleepy old Pueblo. It's a small border city, but we're not. We're the 33rd largest city in the country. We're a major metropolitan city. We have the second largest county in the state. We're a big deal. We're a large municipality and body of government. I think the challenges we face are our level of poverty, our proximity to the border, the geography of our community, and how we travel across the community, how we access resources, how we deliver businesses. I've worked in every geographic area of the city when I was a police officer, and every part of the city has a little bit of a unique feel
and
a different vibe. So, like other major cities, we just don't have these pockets of poverty or pockets of this population lives here and this population doesn't live here. So when we think about our population, our education, our transportation, all those things. And then there's obviously politics at a state level and legislative, and we're, you know, how Pima County and the city of Tucson are perceived by the legislative body of the state. So all those things are complex, environmental factors that impact what's going on in our community.
Yeah. So you're born here?
Born here.
So both born and raised. You're a little bit younger than me. I'm an East Side guy. I went to Sabino High School, went to U of A. About a year ago, I saw my first drug deal. A year ago, and I'm 52. So a year ago, 51.
Yeah.
I don't think you were with me that morning. We were on a bike ride on the loop, and I literally watched a guy selling drugs to another guy as the guy sitting next to him on the loop was smoking something in tinfoil. And I've never seen that my whole life. If I would have seen that like in the 80s, I would have flipped out. Like, and now it's kind of become normal. So two things have changed in my world as a Tucsonan. Number one is I've never seen so many, whether it's homeless or people on drugs in so many corners of the city. They've really spread wide. And then obviously fentanyl's come into play. And I know we're getting kind of into some deep subjects, but we do that on bike rides anyway.
Sure.
So here we are.
Yeah.
So Is the fact that they're spread out throughout the city, is that directly related to free bus fare? And then tell me about fentanyl, because it's my understanding that we have a county attorney that will bust you on your 10th fentanyl pill in your pocket. So that if that's the 10th pill, you've basically legalized pill 1 through 9. So how's that come into play for us?
Yeah, so great point. Of synthetic opiates have changed the landscape of addiction and folks living in mental health crisis. And it's always hard to determine what came first, chicken and the egg. Did mental health crisis drive the use of drugs, or did the drugs drive mental health? I think it's always interconnected and really complicated to dissect that, which is important because it dictates what your public safety personnel can do per state statute and how long you can detain someone and arrest statutes. So it's a complex issue. It's complex because, as you noted, a decade ago, there was a culture where people were embarrassed to use drugs in public spaces. But the reality is less people were using heroin and crack cocaine and methamphetamine and some of the drugs that were out on the street. The synthetic production of these drugs has made it difficult for our country to address that scaling crisis.
They're cheap too, aren't they? It's $2 for a fentanyl pill?
And if you're buying at bulk, they can be on the cents. So when public safety makes an arrest of somebody who's struggling with addiction, they're polydrug users, which means they're using two or more drugs. And typically it's fentanyl and methamphetamine. You don't tend to find as much methamphetamine on their possession because they buy it, they use it. It's still expensive. And the differences with fentanyl, it's mass produced and transported in our country at such a scale that everybody, has excess of the drugs. 10 years ago, you or I would need something we called a trapper we'd have to go to a certain neighborhood and we'd have to find somebody that would connect us with a dealer. They would take your money and they would go, and sometimes they'd come back. And that was an area of focus that I led with the community response team. And sometimes they wouldn't. But what was certain is they would take a portion of the drugs that you bought. Today, you and I can go, just like much of our community sees throughout our city, can go to specific places and see those transactions. We often get a lot of complaints about the transit system and the bus stops, convenience stores, parks, the loop. And we see these things and we rightfully question, why is it so accessible? I can tell you from my retired job, from my previous life, that the officers are out there doing 100% more narcotics arrests than they've ever done. What that's done is overwhelmed other systems that haven't been able to scale. So certainly had appreciation for the staff when I became chief to say, you got to go out and you got to do proactive work and do enforcement. Nobody in our community should expect an arrest to change somebody living in crisis, and that they're going to find sobriety through that experience. And we'll talk more about that now that I have oversight of the DCS detaining crisis system through my new role. And that's part of a county leadership team that provides medical services to folks in crisis and medically aided treatment in the jail. Because we often joke and we struggle with our, as we're aging and wanting to maintain healthy lifestyles for our families and our professions, we make dietary changes. And those are difficult. Sometimes we succeed and sometimes we fail. Imagine that times 100 when somebody is in crisis and not making good decisions and they're trying to navigate addiction. Imagine when you have a medical scare and you go through the hospital system, which can be a complex system to navigate, and you have all of mental clarity to do that, even though you have a physical ailment. Imagine not having that mental clarity and having this ailment and not being able to ask or advocate for yourself for care. So really complex issues. One of the reasons I chose to take this job is I certainly had some frustrations as a police chief. Our chief of police, that became very public at some times, and I wasn't shy about some of those. And some of those were a difference of opinion, I would say, with our county attorney. And we'll dive into that a little bit more. The reality is we had a stance, and I continue to have the stance, that it's going to take metropolitan government approach and nonprofit
work. As in what? Define that. I know what you're saying, but I want you to say it out loud.
So systems have to work together. So it starts with one of my areas of focus as the new DCA, Deputy County Administrator of one of three under the county, and having the suite of justice resources and being able to collaborate with the county attorney and with the sheriff and with all of my directors and city resources is, first, we have to digitize. We are using paper forms today in 2026, and it will be into 27 and 28. Before I can come back on this show and say, we've all worked together.
You just spoke at the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. We just saw him speak. And again, to repeat, we're not talking iPads here. We're not talking computers here. They're literally using
carbon copy papers.
Carbon copy. I didn't even know they made carbon copy anymore. Yeah. And they're literally using carbon copy paper in our justice system.
Right, which is crazy. So when we're talking about how, in a world on how to utilize artificial intelligence or machine learning to enhance service delivery and system improvement, and I know there's always a fear, I'll just cover it, of employees losing their jobs, which, trust me, there's plenty of work in this space where employees' jobs will shift and adjust and change, and not, I don't see a world where we're laying off a bunch of people. It's just enhancing service delivery.
The world's in AI now.
Yeah, you have to embrace it. You have to know we're heading that way.
Still back in the 70s.
Correct. Right. Yeah. And so here's why it's complicated. First of all, we're two large bodies of government that have to work together. And you have the board of supervisors, you have city leadership and the mayor and council, and we have a board chair. And so managing all of, I'm not telling anybody on your show that they don't recognize this, that it's really the community expecting metropolitan government approach to solving some of these big problems. When you see it throughout our county and our city, it needs to be a metropolitan response to that effort. And there are those conversations are going on.
Yeah, we need everyone pulling in the same direction.
Correct. And that's political views, that's financial investment, that's it. But what becomes also difficult in that problem is it boils down to one thing too, is the foundation is building relationships. Because when we talk about changes in the courts, the community votes elected officials in who run our courts. We supplant and support budgets, but we don't control. And so all the elected officials don't report to Ms. Lesher, our county administrator, but they certainly have regular conversations with her about their budget and where things are going.
Yeah, so, and to make this point for those who are watching, what I always found interesting talking to Chad, who I used to call Chief Kazmar, the chief of police for the city of Tucson is an employee of the city, but the sheriff at Pima County is an elected official. So your city government, your council members, they kind of mandate their chief of police.
Sure.
But when it comes to the supervisors of the county, they don't, because the sheriff is an elected official.
Correct.
Total different ballgame.
It's a different ballgame. So both Chief Prieto and through her leadership change, she serves at the will of the city manager day to day, just like I serve at the will of Ms. Lesher on a day to day basis as well. So all those things go together into really complex systems that are, you know, realistically underfunded and understaffed and overworked, and trying to have people see a vision and see a strategy. And certainly the county's been working on executing on that. And I think, you know, we should expect metropolitan government to have strategic vision on some of these things, and then providing data and metrics to whether we're succeeding or failing. And that's important too, because I can tell you from being within, you know, my previous life and now my new role, there's been such an investment to address the issue, but the scaling of the problem has overshadowed that investment.
And so kind of to as we move on to your next chapter, as you look at this, as you were chief of police, if you looked at us budget-wise, for the budget that you had, what percentage of the true budget that you need would that be? So if 100% of the budget for you to actually get your job done appropriately, how much of that budget are you actually getting?
So from the policing perspective, that about 95% of the budget was personnel cost.
Right.
And so it is difficult to innovate and meet needs. And as we were rebuilding post George Floyd era of making sure that we're retaining the right staff and recruiting the next generation of right officers to serve our community, which we focus on, I think it's both the sheriff's perspective and the Chief Prieto's perspective, that you'll continue to see a focus on hiring talent from within our community. Because as you said earlier, we're not Austin and we're not Albuquerque and we're not El Paso. And it also provides opportunities of employment for folks and breaking generational poverty. So when we want a different Tucson, we have to think about how are we making those investments. And I'll tell you, I spent a lot of time evaluating that, both from my professional life and personal life, as I have a 22-year-old and serving in the Army, and I have a soon-to-be 16-year-old trying to figure out what he wants to do when he grows up, and you know what does that look like? What responsibilities do I have as a parent, a working professional, and a generational Tucsonan who cares about our community?
Yeah. So you're politicking me a little bit.
Yeah. So let's go back to your tough question.
How much money do you need to actually operate our department?
That's a tough question to answer, because
personnel, but then there's right. equipment. How are your vehicles? How do you have the right guns that you need?
Well,
let's
even go deeper than that. I think for a region, we have to evaluate system investment. And so the first point goes back to, if we're using carbon copy papers and we're all on different systems that are not integrated, there's something that the city has developed and the county has collaborated on called a data lake. And it's just like what it sounds like. It's a safe space to share information. Because we should know what happens from an arrest and how many times you've been arrested, Edmund, and whether the reaction of the courts and decision-making is changing your behavior and we're making appropriate investments to modify your behavior. That goes into what the detaining crisis system, it goes into transition center, it goes into the courts. So I can't sit here today and tell you, if you've been arrested 10 times, what the outcome of all of those arrests were. And that's a problem. And so at a metropolitan government level, we are working on that. And I wish I could sit here today and say, we're going to have it locked in this year, but it is a focus of both bodies of government. I think you'll see us moving towards that data collection, data sharing. And frankly, the taxpayers should expect that from us.
Okay? Yeah. So when you left the department, I'll ask it another way.
Yeah.
So when you left the department, how many officers did you have?
We had probably 750-ish deployable police officers.
What do you think, a city of our size, how many officers should we have?
You know, in a utopian world where budget...
No utopian, just like basics.
So that's the interesting thing about a police department, is there's no set industry standard across the country of what that number looks
based
like.
Based on what you think it would take for us to actually appropriately...
Yeah, my goal was always 1,000 deployable and our 900 deployable and around 300 community service officers are folks out in the field, our professional staff investigators. And I think so we have to look at that from, a regional perspective, not just from a municipality. I think we have to right-size budgets. Public safety is always going to be a big draw, both emergency, and when I say public safety, it's emergency communications. It's your, which is your 911 system. It's your fire department. It's your police department. Now we're starting to look at also when we're looking at the detaining crisis system and also the transition center, it's not as simple of a conversation of more of saying, okay, if we have X amount of officers, we need court staff, we need attorneys, both prosecutors and public defenders, which I also oversee in my new role. So we have to look at the workload of all those systems. We have to go deeper than looking at face value of just how many police cars, how many guns. Certainly that was my primary focus as a police chief, which is essentially a director. When I look at it from a deputy county administrator level, it's a complete system investment, which is a much more substantial and financial investment. Now, what I'll tell you too, what makes it more complex is our ability to accept and utilize federal grants with the changing landscape of politics from Washington to our state to our local government.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, so when we talk about the changing landscape of immigration enforcement and expectations from the federal government versus what our community expects, and there's also DEI component of that, some of these grants are difficult, if not impossible, to accept pending litigation.
Yeah.
Which is a problem in a community that needs that funding resource.
As you look at your new role, do you think your I can already answer my question. Your perspective has changed now that you have a new role, because I think you're seeing kind of the back end of after you make the arrest, how that affects the county, et cetera. So tell us what the new role is and what's the, since we're called the upside, what is our upside? Where are we headed with your new role with having Chad Kazmar in there?
So certainly my role on paper as a chief of police was focused on the policing side. I took a larger responsibility, especially years 3 and 4, recognizing, okay, we're doing a lot of work and it's not being effective. I was effective in my roles and responsibilities as far as, and I think you'll continue to see this with Chief Prieto, of when the community calls and says, hey, I can't run a business because I'm picking up needles and I'm picking up human feces and I'm doing all these things and my customers don't feel safe. That's a problem. That's harm to the community, and the police department and the sheriff's, including sheriff's department, should be responsive to that. Honestly, my areas of focus broadened as chief, and I had frustrations that were sometimes public that I didn't have the platform to do more, which I now have as a deputy county administrator. So, 6 weeks into my new role, I have a deeper appreciation for the work that happens inside the jail and as the transition comes out and the complexities within the court system, to understand how we impact the biggest thing that I think we hear in this community, which is, man, there's so many unsheltered folks. There's so much trash. There's public drug use. What are we going to do about that? And I think that will shape Tucson's future. So that's one of my big responsibilities, no pressure, is how do I work with city government? How do I work with the police department, the sheriff's department, courts, DCS, the transition center, and evaluate our performance? Because I'm going to be candid with you. There's always opportunity, as you know, from running businesses and now being a professional sports team owner, of you can always enhance the system that you have, which is the easy and the hard part, right? People say, well, I'm going to need more resources. I'm going to need this. I need a new computer system. The opportunity is challenging individuals who have a lot of pride in the work that they do to see a more global picture of how their work can have a deeper impact without feeling like they're taking a loss or they're not getting credit for the work that they're doing.
Yeah. I think my perspective, knowing you for years, we're lucky to have you at the county because you just got done with the experience of being chief of police of a large city. Tucson's a large city. So I'm very excited to see what you'll do. When Jan Lesher told me she was hiring you, I thought home run. So very excited you're in the position you're in. We're lucky to have you. I think Chief Prieto was absolutely the right choice for following in your footsteps. Monica's going to do a great job of holding that force together and continuing the work that you started. So thank you for all that you've done. And that's been great having you here on the show. So it's been fun. So ladies and gentlemen, Chad Kazmar, our former chief of police, now the
Deputy County Administrator.
The title's too long. Tell Jan. You've been watching The Upside. My name is Edmund Marquez. Thank you to the Heath team at Nova Home Loans. Make sure you watch your Tucson Sugar Skulls and root for your indoor professional football team. Great to see you.